ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय खमाश भूयन्नरदेवकेश्याः पुत्र्या समं न्याय विधाव प्रथीथा क एव थेथ नयम् नाद्रियेथ स्वयैव कन्त्यां क्षिपथिम् इव श्रियम् कामाश भूयन्नरदेवते पुत्र्या समं न्याय विधा पथिता क एव थेथ नयम् नाद्रियेत स्वयैव कन्त्या क्षिपथिम् इव श्रियम् कामाश भूयन्नरदेवते पुत्र्या समं न्याय विधा प्रथिता क एव थेथ नयम् नाद्रियेत स्वयैव कन्त्या क्षिपथिम् इव श्रियम् Translation. Let your daughter's desire for marriage, which is recognized in the Vedic scriptures, be fulfilled. Who would not accept her hand? She is so beautiful that her bodily luster alone, that by her bodily luster alone, she excels the beauty of her ornaments. Purport. Kardama Muni wanted to marry Devahuti in the recognized manner of marriage prescribed in the scriptures. As stated in the Vedic literatures, the first class process is to call the bridegroom to the home of the bride and hand her to him in charity with a dowry of necessary ornaments, gold, furniture, and other household paraphernalia. This form of marriage is prevalent amongst higher class Hindus even today, and is declared in the Shastras to confer great religious merit on the bride's father. To give a daughter in charity to a suitable son-in-law is considered to be one of the pious activities of a householder. There are 8 forms of marriage mentioned in the scripture, Manusmriti, but only one process of marriage, Brahma or Rajasika marriage, is now current. Other kinds of marriage by love, by exchange of garlands, or by kidnapping the bride are now forbidden in this Kali age. Formerly, Kshatriyas would at their pleasure kidnap a princess from another royal house, and there would be a fight between the Kshatriya and the girl's family. Then, if the kidnapper was the winner, the girl would be offered to him for marriage. Even Krishna married Rukmini by that process, and some of his sons and grandsons also married by kidnapping. Krishna's grandsons kidnapped Duryodhana's daughter, which caused a fight between the Kuru and Yadu families. Afterwards, an adjustment was made by the elderly members of the Kuru family. Such marriages were current in bygone ages, but at the present moment they are impossible because the strict principles of Kshatriya life have practically been abolished. Since India has become dependent on foreign countries, the particular influences of her social orders have been lost. Now, according to the scriptures, everyone is a Shudra. The so-called Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas have forgotten their traditional activities, and in the absence of these activities they are called Shudras. It is said in the scripture, Kalau Shudra Shambhava. In the age of Kali, everyone will be like Shudras. The traditional social customs are not followed in this age, although formally they were followed strictly. So we see Kardama Muni, he wanted to accept the hand of Devahuti. What's interesting to note is how he is accepting. He is the father is coming and on behalf of his daughter requesting that Kardama Muni accept her hand. And he doesn't say just yes, but he's saying that let her desire be fulfilled. So this is very significant, because it's not that he's coming and you'll do this, yes, I'll do this. So the center is not actually the discussion between the father and the son-in-law, or the son-in-law himself, since he is the one being approached. But it is the daughter. The daughter, it's her desire. And so therefore, let that desire be fulfilled, because it is according to the religious principles. So we see here the foundation of relationship here, that the consideration is the religious principles and the need of the persons involved. It is not, one is not thinking of one's own desires, because he has the desire, he wants to be married, and this is known by Kardama Muni, excuse me, by Swayambhuva Manu. So therefore he has been approached, but the principle is that's not enough. He may desire, but that's not the most important thing. The most important thing are the religious principles, and that the girl herself is interested in this process. So her need is then what is more important. So therefore he is mentioning this. And also that he mentions here that she is so beautiful by her bodily luster alone, she excels the beauty of her ornaments. So he's talking about the mood or the nature of the girl. That is the actual beauty. The body is not actually what is beautiful. It's the mood in which the girl projects herself. That is what actually makes her beauty. So he's appreciating the good qualities that she has, because without a purified mind, intelligence, and ego, then one cannot project this kind of beauty. Because one is acting on the platform of relationship, of interaction or emotional interaction. So that creates a different kind of beauty. It's not the same as the present day, where the girls try to project themselves by their physical beauty. Though, of course, still they have to put their mind and energy into their body to make it attractive, their body or their clothes. But here we see is that they create that attractiveness in their body or dress by putting their energy there, and that creates the attraction. But here we see that her body luster was so great that it alone was more brilliant than the ornaments. The ornaments are not made out of some cheap stuff. We're talking about pure gold here. And pure gold, when it's polished, is extremely shiny and extremely effulgent. I mean, people get gold and they look at it and become bewildered because it is so attractive. It glitters so much. So we can understand how attractive she was by her internal mood, that her mind and was so purified and so dignified, that it was, that the beauty, that was what was beautiful. She was not projecting her energy into her ornaments, into her clothes, or into her body. Otherwise, then the comment would have been about that. It's not that it's not proper to mention that, because these things are very dear to the girls, that they feel that it is part of their existence, part of their being, so it should also be appreciated. So we see in Mahabharata that generally the appreciation of the girls is on that platform. You know, that they are very beautiful, they have very thin waist, or very pleasant smile, or fine movements. These things will be mentioned. What we see here is that he has mentioned her bodily luster, or because that will be the subtle body. That will not be the gross body. So this is a very different thing. So because the purpose here in religious marriage is the interaction between the husband and wife based on perfecting their life in spiritual advancement, that they relate to each other based on these emotional needs that have been dovetailed and engaged in the service of the Lord. And in this way, they're actually advancing in the spiritual path. So his desire for marriage was on this platform for religious and spiritual development. And we can see by her mood that it is also the same. Therefore, it becomes a good match, a very good match. So Prabhupada's mentioning here that in the, you know, amongst the high class Hindus, that then this is the process of marriage, is this Brahma marriage, that the father, after finding a suitable groom, then respecting his daughter by making nice arrangements, you know, for her, for a very good quality dress, ornaments, and the suitable presentations that she may take with her into her new situation in the groom's house. Then that girl is then given to the groom. And so this is considered to give great religious merit to the bride's father. And it also, then we see of charities, it establishes the relationship between the two families. Other charities you give, and it's finished. You give some money, and then it means if the person maintains a relationship because of gratefulness, then it's nice. But here, when a daughter is given in charity, then that creates a relationship that is not temporary. It then gets deeper and deeper, because the family relationships, the more they work together, the deeper that becomes. So it's a very different kind of marriage. Therefore, it's considered the best of all the marriages, this Brahma marriage, or probably gives here Rajasika marriage. He says these others, then they're not in this age, they're forbidden. So it appears that these processes, as we had described, that the Kshatriyas, the Gandharva, or the Rakshasa rites, in this age aren't considered, because you're not dealing with the quality of persons that can perform those activities. Though they are even compared, even in other ages, they're considered to be not as good. But it will be part of the situation, because it creates the proper atmosphere that matches with the moods that are going on. Means in the Rakshasa marriage, then a qualified boy comes, because they're Kshatriyas, because you don't hear of others using this rite. Of course, except Rakshasas. But he shows his prowess, because he's a Kshatriya, so he should be able to fight, he should be bold, he should be fearless, he should be able to have the determination of things that he wants to do, that he has the commitment to do them. So therefore, he's able to come in alone or with his army and kidnap the girl from another family of Kshatriyas. So they are also warriors. So that would show his prowess. So if he's able to defeat, then after that, then we see, then they perform the Brahma rite. It's not just left at that. You don't see anyone of these great kings that they've just come kidnap the girl and run off and that's it. No. Means after that, they've proven the other family, the girl's side of the family, is impressed that this boy is of good quality because of his Kshatriya spirit is actually, you know, proven. Then they invite him back, and then he's received with all honor in that. And then, as is going on here, then they perform all these same rites. So Arjuna kidnaps Subhadra. Then after they all agreed that he was the suitable match, then he invited him back, and then in Dwarka there was a great wedding. And after that, then Krishna and Balaram, and, you know, so many others, Satyaki and that, then they all went along with the bride and groom back to Hastinapur, and then spent time there with their new in-laws. And so this way it was very nice. Krishna also kidnapped Rukmini, then after that, then he comes back, and then there's the marriage ceremony. And also here what's mentioned, Krishna's grandsons, sons and grandsons, and they kidnap Duryodhana's daughter. That's a very elaborate, that's a very fun pastime. I'm not sure if you've ever, you might have seen that old, it's I think a South Indian Tamil movie with Ghatotkacha, he was involved. That I'm not sure who it was, if it was the son or grandson. I don't remember his name, because I can never, somehow that I can never remember the names in this pastime. And he was going through the forest, and he happened to go through Ghatotkacha's place where he was stationed. And then, because he came there, immediately a fight ensued, and it was a big, big fight, and it was going. And so then Ghatotkach was very impressed with the prowess of what is there. And then at some point there was some discussion of the lineage. Then when they found out that one was the son of Bhima, and the other was, you know, connected to Krishna, then they understood that they were cousins. Like that. So then they immediately became friends, and then got together, and they were, you know, sitting and discussing, and as, you know, young men, then, you know, and also of the warrior class, and naturally one of the topics that they would, you know, naturally turn to would be marriage and, you know, any prospects and this and that. So then it was learned that Duryodhana's daughter, I think it was Duryodhana's daughter? Or was it in this one? Unless I'm thinking of a different one. Maybe thinking of a different one. Whatever, same principle is there. Then, I think there was something different. It was connected with Balaram. The girl was on Balaram's side. Yeah, it may have been Balaram's daughter. So then he had mentioned that he was thinking to marry her, but Balaram had already arranged to marry her to someone else, to, I think, Duryodhana's son. Yeah, Duryodhana's son. So then Ghatotkach said, "Oh, don't worry about that. I'll work this one out." So then, you know, because he is a rakshasa, so, you know, the going and kidnapping girls is their method. So that is their, you know, birthright. So then he said, "I'll just go. You said, explain to me what she looks like, where she would stay, this, that." So he explained everything. Then he went through the air, flew through there, and went to, I think it was in Dwarka. And he arrived there, and when he got there and he was going to go in the gate, he noticed this old, like a, how do you say, like a bard, a minstrel, an old man sitting on the side of the room, just kind of like laying there. And then as he's walking by, this old man asks him, "Where are you going?" And it's kind of like, you know, who are you to ask me where I'm going? You know, it's kind of like, you know, he just ignored him. He says, "No." And then when he ignored him, then the old man says, no one gets in here without my permission. It's kind of like, yeah, right. You know, no one gets into the royal fortress of Dwarka without the permission of this guy laying in the street, you know. So it's kind of like he just, you know, ignored him and tried to go in. He couldn't get in. You know, so he said, "Okay, you can go in. What are you doing?" You know, he says, you know, he mentioned that he, you know, whatever. So then he went inside, he found the palace, found where the girl was, and then, you know, he was going to pick up the girl there, and he noticed next to it another bed. And he thought, that's strange. So he checked there, and there was another girl exactly the same as the one in this bed. Next to that was another bed. And like this, there were thousands of beds with thousands of these same girl in it, you know. And so then he went back to the bard and said, "Okay, what's going on?" You know, he could understand that something's happening here. Because he's a rakshasa, so they have all mystic powers. So he could appreciate that whoever was outside there laying in the street had more potency than he did. So then it was revealed that that was Krishna, who was out there. And he had just taken that mood. And Ghatotkach then revealed what his plan was, and, you know, what was the purpose. And Krishna liked that, because he never liked making alliances with Duryodhana on his side. Like Subhadra was supposed to be married to Duryodhana, and then Krishna came up with the plan that Arjuna should kidnap her and you know, just thwart that. And now Duryodhana's son is going to be married, I guess, to Balaram's daughter. And so he didn't actually like that connection either. And so then he thought, this is a great idea. So he says, okay. So then they made a plan. They discussed, and then Ghatotkach, you know, went into the room. There was only one girl there. Picked her up, took her back. And then with his priests and all that, he arranged the marriage and all that. And then they lived happily in his ashram. So in the meantime, then Ghatotkach came down, and he brought all his followers and that. And just across on the mainland before going to Dwarka, he set up this huge market. They called it Maya Bazaar. It's the market of Maya. So then in it was all the best quality of anything you could think of was there. And then Ghatotkach himself, he went back to the palace in Dwarka and where the girl was, and then he took the form of the girl. And so then he you know, then from that time on till the marriage, and he played the part of that girl. So then Duryodhana's party with, you know, his son, they came, and they were coming to Dwarka to, you know, they were invited to come. And then the marriage happens at the girl's house, and then the boy's side of the family takes the girl and goes back to their house. That's the tradition. So when they came and they saw this amazing market, you know, just on the, you had to go through it to get to you know, catch the boats to go to Dwarka. So then he saw, they all saw this, and what was inside was amazing. You know, it's like they were the emperors, so they had on the best clothes, best weapons, best crowns, best everything. But they noticed in this market, whatever was there was much better than whatever they had on, you know. So they thought, wow, this is amazing. So they ask, you know, what is all this? And he says, no, this is arranged for all of you. It's part of the marriage program. You know, he says, wow, you know, it says, wow, okay, we want to go, you know, they want to go looking their best, so, you know, how much is the stuff you got? He says, no, it's free. He says, all you have to do is whatever you want, you give us, you want a crown, you give us your crown and take this crown. You want shoes, you take these shoes. You want a cloth, you take those. All you do is give us your old things and take all the new. So they thought, wow, this is fun. This is a very unique program. They've never seen this in any marriage. You know, it's always in a marriage you try to create something new and outdo anything anybody else has done, so everyone will talk about it. So they thought, wow, this is impressive, you know. So then they did that. They changed everything they were wearing. They came to the market and took everything new. And so then they're dressed and looking very good and feeling very happy and confident. So then in this way they entered Dwarka. And then they were received, and they came into the hall, and they were all sitting. And, you know, the first thing they do is to see them, feed them, this and that. And so then after this, then it was nice, and, you know, exchange pleasantries and all. And then after that, they're given their rooms, they settle in, and then the next day we'll start the proceedings and that. So then, you know, after all this, then they went out and, you know, went to put on their shoes, and just as they were putting on their shoes, they turned into frogs and hopped off. They thought, that's strange. But, you know, whatever, you know, having a good time and everything's nice, they're here for the wedding, so you don't have to worry about, you know, such details. So then they went back to their rooms and all. And then the next day, you know, they did all the arrangements and all this, and before then, they have a day, they bathe the boy and girl, do all these different things, and in the evening there'll be a big feast and all that. And so then they're all there for the feast, and, you know, rows and rows of tables, and all the kshatriyas and their wives and everybody, their families are all there, they're all eating, having a great time. And then just at one moment, all their clothes disappear. Everybody's sitting there, you know, very embarrassing, you know, like that, you know, and then you see, and it's like you have one table and it's got one, what do you call it, cover on it, tablecloth, you know, not many people can wear one tablecloth, so there was definitely some are under the table, some wearing the tablecloth, someone jumped behind the curtains, like it's a very embarrassing situation, you know, whatever, they got over that. Then Ghatotkacha, because he's a Rakshasa and he's big and hungry, you know, like Bhima, because he's Bhima's son. So then he was getting really hungry, you know, because, I mean, you know, the girls, they eat a little bit, you know, very petite and all this kind of thing, but, you know, he's a big Rakshasa. So when everybody was out, then one time he went in when they cooked everything for the meal, then he went into the kitchen, you know, closed the doors, and then took on a huge size, you know, his normal size, and then sucked up all the pots with his breath, and then, you know, ate everything, and then spat the pots out one by one. So you have, you know, in the kitchen the sounds of, you know, big, huge pots that can cook for thousands of people, then, you know, flying through the air, crashing onto the ground and banging into each other and, you know, moving around the kitchen. So that sound, then everybody came, you know, running, you know, what's going on in the kitchen, you know, and, you know, that, you know, is there a war going on, demons have attacked, or, you know, what's happened? And then when they all got there, then they just, you know, saw, you know, this little, you know, girl, you know, kind of cowering in the corner, you know, wow, what's going on here, you know, yeah, and then they all look around, and like this. So, you know, it's kind of like, you know, these discussions go around, things just, you know, a little strange, just a little out of the ordinary, you know, shoes turning into frogs, clothes disappearing, this huge, and all the food's gone, you know, and they have to cook again, and so whatever, things go on okay, and then they get to the point, actually of the marriage. So then the groom is standing there and the girl comes out, they cover her with a cloth. That's the first thing, because they've never seen each other up to this point. So then the girl comes with all her maidservants and they go around the boy seven times, and then they hold up a cloth and then he removes the cloth, and it's the first time they see each other. So it's a very, you know, nice moment for them. And that, so when he removes the cloth, then he sees them there, there's all these, you know, fangs and hair and like that, and he almost like he faints, you know. And so that, you know, then the Rakshasa goes back to his normal looking, like this nice beautiful girl, and so he faints, and then everybody thinks, oh, how romantic. he was so impressed with the beauty of the girl that he just fainted, you know, like that. So then, you know, everything goes on. So they move on to the next thing. They tie the hands. The sandalwood paste is put. They put their hands, and then a married woman with sons comes and puts the garland around and with kusa grass, and then the father will pour the water to give the girl in charity. So when they put their hand like that, then they're sitting there, and then, you know, Gatojgach is the girl, just squeezes his hand a little bit. So much that he also faints from the pain, right? So then they think, well, you know, the boy's very, you know, very emotional, very absorbed, you know, he touched the girl's hand. And everybody's thinking it's not very nice and wonderful, like this. You know, though kind of like Balaram and Duryodhana are getting a little worried, you know, this is not normal. They've been in a lot of marriages and they've been this stuff going on, you know. And Balaram, because he's the Supreme Lord, generally he knows what's going on, but he doesn't know what's going on. So he's starting to think, something. This is getting really weird here, you know. And so then they go on, and okay, they get through that part of the marriage, and they go to what's called Asmakramana, where the girl puts her foot on the stone, you know, and takes the vow that she'll be fixed in her vows. And that, and then they go around the fire. So then what happens is then at that point then the foot of the girl is put on the stone. So in this case, I guess in their tradition, the boy would do that because he's the one fixing like that. Sometimes it's the mother, sometimes it's the priest, something different Vedas they use different. So then he goes, you know, and moves the cloth to, you know, put her foot on the stone when he sees his big hairy foot claws and everything like that. And again he faints like that. And then at this time, this Duryodhana says, wait a minute, we're out of here. This is too weird, you know? Like that, oh, no, like this and that. And the boy says also, forget it, I'm not marrying this girl. This is too weird. So then they all pack up and they huff and leave and all this. And Balaram's completely freaked out because, you know, it's a, you know, great insult and all that to the family and all these things. And so he's really upset and, you know, fretting, and, you know, Duryodhana, just they all pack, leave, and Balaram's, you know, beside himself. And then at the end, all this is going on, and he turns and looks at Krishna, and Krishna's just sitting there, very pleasant and undisturbed. So then he says, oh, okay, now we understand. Okay, Krishna, what's going on here? You know, because he's seen it happen before. Krishna does something, and you know, no one, you know, so if something's going on and he doesn't know about it, it means it's Krishna's Maya. His personal Maya is doing it. Because otherwise, his Maya is what's ruining the cosmic manifestation. But Krishna, because he's from Krishna, therefore Krishna can do things that even he doesn't know about. You know, like Agasura Leela, when all the cowherd boys, no, the Brahma Vimohan Leela, when they were all stolen, the cowherd boys, and he became all the cows and calves. So Balaram is observing that, you know, wait, the rasa between everybody and all the cows and calves is the same as with Krishna. So there's something going on here. So then he approached Krishna with his doubt, and then Krishna revealed. So he went to Krishna, and then he asked him what's going on here. So then Krishna said actually the girl didn't want to marry this boy, and, you know, this other boy wanted to marry, and they'd given their heart to each other, and so therefore it would have been wrong if this marriage had taken place by this arrangement. So, and you know, then he revealed that it was Gatodgach was doing, you know, by his mercy, then Gatodgach was doing all this under his power. And otherwise, he couldn't do it. It means the Rakshasa's Maya cannot be overpower Balaram, you know. So, therefore, he was imbued with Krishna's Maya. So then Balaram then, you know, agreed to the whole thing, and then Ghatotkacha went back and brought the boy and girl, and then they, you know, all the arrangements were there. So then they just went ahead with the marriage as planned, like that. So, like that, these things happen. But not in Kali Yuga, like that. Also in the Gandharva marriage, then the principle is that the girl herself bestows herself upon the groom. So, and that's considered righteous or religious. But that's on the principle is because the girl, the most important element in the aspect of the relation for the marriage is the girl has given her heart to that person, and along with that comes that commitment and duty to maintain that relationship. So what it means in this Gandharva is that they had those qualities and they could give themselves like that, and then the marriage would work. But nowadays it's not understand who they are, who the duties are, and the relationships. So then the problem comes is they're not necessarily able to give themselves because they don't even know who they are that they're giving, or what their duties are, or who the husband is, what is their duties, what's the relationship. So in this age, therefore, it's forbidden, because unless it's arranged by someone else, then or at least there's others who are checking and helping the bride and groom make sure that the relationship is good, they may just on emotions make the wrong decision. They may decide, you know, just because the others is you know, physically beautiful, they like them, or, you know, some other aspect. You know, they meet each other not in a realistic environment. You know, the boy and girl, they live at their own homes, they have their own lifestyle and the way they do everything, their own values and all that. But when they get together on the weekend to go to a movie or out for a walk in the park, of course it's going to be nice because you're on your best. But you don't know who the person is. You know, it's nice if they get married and all they ever did was just meet, you know, at the park and sit on the bench, you know, the rest of their life, then it's fine. But if you have to live together, that's a different story, right? Because he has his life, she has hers. They don't know at all what that is. They have no idea what it is. So therefore, you need other people to help you figure out what is going on in the rest of the life. But in the previous ages, then the principle of the girl was determined and committed that whoever she married, that would be the person that she would give her heart to and she would love. So it didn't matter who it was, like that. Means in theory, it didn't matter who it was. Whoever it was, that was the person you were going to be with. So then the either by their own self seeing that this is a good arrangement, but even if it wasn't a good arrangement, they would commit themselves to it. So therefore, even the Gandharva rite, even though it's inferior because there's less checking in that, it's based on mutual attraction, still the commitment and duty was of a level that even if it wasn't so compatible, they would make it work. They would tolerate it and go with it. But otherwise, then the Brahma marriage means the father and other members of the family and close relatives or friends, then they would check out the arrangements and see that this is going to work. Then they would recommend that to the daughter, and if the daughter felt this was a good arrangement, then she would commit herself to it. But once committing herself, she was committed. That was just the mood of the girls. Because once the heart is given, the first person, then that's where the heart stays. It's very hard. Nowadays, then, you know, the girls at a young age, they may give their heart to somebody, and then it's taken back and given again and 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 taken back, and they're like this, like that. So then they become very tough and nasty, and they don't believe that anybody's going to be worth giving their heart to. You know, so whatever, they can't avoid it, but at the same time, it's not the same. The Vedic culture, understanding this nature of the girls, didn't want to disappoint them. Therefore, they made sure that the first arrangement was the arrangement. So that was the whole point. The consideration was the emotions of the girl. Therefore, we see here also that Kardama is making this point, is that it is her desire, she has given her heart, so therefore, and she is qualified, and everything is proper, So therefore, it's a good arrangement. So he's accepted it. Like that. And then And then this last point is which is very interesting. It says, since India has become dependent on foreign countries, which is a very interesting point, is that one would say, no, India is independent. But their independence means they became independent from their own culture and became dependent upon outside cultures. That's the interesting point. You know, Gandhi's idea is that we become free from the British rule because they are destroying our culture. And then as soon as they got the freedom, then the politicians came in and say, okay, now we're going to modernize, industrialize, and everything like that. And so Gandhi was very shocked at the outcome like that. And so then now they become dependent. So all their economics, all their different things, what they look through for their values and their culture and everything is outside India. Very minimal is maintained. Therefore, he's saying here is that therefore these Kshatriyas and Vaishyas have forgotten the Brahmins, they've forgotten their traditions. So in this age, then, other than this Brahma marriage, then the others shouldn't be followed. You know, because then they all act like Shudras. They don't act like, you know, high-grade, respectable, you know, families. They just act like just, you know, common, ordinary people who are just interested in their own selfish purposes. But, any questions on this? Okay. Interesting. So we'll end here then. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Sainita Gaura Premanda ki.